ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Monday. It is AFL Monday time, of course, with myself, Corbin Middlemass, Ben Cameron and Adam Rabanaskas. And today it is all about the Tasmania Devils. They have their inaugural coach. We're going to get into it with the chairman of the Tasmania Devils. Grant O'Brien is our feature guest, plus all the hot button issues on the back of round 19 of the AFL Premiership season.
Yeah, of course, I'm incredibly excited, and the opportunity to be the inaugural coach of a startup football club, which is not just a football club, it's a football state, and it's a passionate football state. And I can't wait to make sure we lead the charge in telling the passion of this football state and bring it to life on the national scene.
So for Essendon fans, soak it all in. After losing 29 of their last 30 matches, having not tasted success since round 6 against the Bombers, the Dean Sullivan era has takeoff. And now, Day Wicks, after the full-time siren, across the face of goal and misses with a behind. But the Bombers win by 3 points, their second win of the season, and the Giants miss their chance to move inside the AFL top 10.
We've got to improve on our footy. So we're still striving to be a team that, you know, can play anywhere against anyone. And yeah, clearly we're not the finished product with what we put out there today, so we won't be flirting with our form too much.
Picked up by McCreary, though, who can fling the ball all the way out to centre wing. And the Magpies fans at the MCG celebrate. 5 wins in a row for the Pies, and they're well and truly in the fight for finals.
On 774 ABC Melbourne,
ABC Sport Digital,
and ABC Listen,
this is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben.
It certainly is on the heels of round 19. The Bombers have got a win. The Tassie Devils have got a coach. And 4 8-win teams all missed an opportunity to shore up a spot inside the top 10. That's what happened in round 19. We're here to pick it all apart. This is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben on ABC Radio across the state of Victoria. And of course, wherever you may be listening, perhaps on catch-up through ABC AFL Daily, where you can stream this episode every single week along with four other conversations. ABC AFL Daily, wherever you get your podcasts. Your calls, 1300 222 774. That's 1300 222 774. The chairman of the Tassie Devils joins us on the program, Grant O'Brien, very shortly. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron's on the other side of the desk. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corbin. Great to be here. A massive day in footy in this country today. And I'm pleased to be sharing the studio with the master motivator himself as well. Adam Rabanaskas, the youngest living Essendon Premiership player on planet Earth.
Yep.
And also the master motivator. Twice this year he has spoken to the Dons pregame. Once was in Gather Round ahead of Sully Roby's debut, presented him the number 9 jumper, and the other was yesterday. You might have noticed a theme there. Those are Essendon's two last wins in their last 31 games, Rammer.
Yes, well, good evening to everybody. I think I've fired all the bullets, though. That's it now. No. I'm not sure what else to talk about.
I thought you were going to lead us in maybe a motivational chat.
Well, it's hard to motivate the unmotivated. So,
but we're unconditional. We don't need motivating.
No, that's right. That's right. Look, no, it was good. It was terrific. I'd had a word to the boys on Saturday morning, which was terrific. Dean Sullivan asked me to come in, obviously being the challenge game. So always a special round for me where Essendon wear the yellow armband and the kids run out. So I just told him a little bit of my story and what happened during my career. So hopefully they got a little bit out of it, and geez, they played well yesterday, though.
I saw some of it online. It was excellent. You did, in all seriousness, you handled that superbly. And correlation, causation, whatever you want to call it, the cause and effect. 2 wins in their last 31 for the Bombers.
I didn't quite have the words like you did this morning to explain yesterday with the challenge game as well, Corbin, but you said this morning, heartwarming and heartbreaking all at once, and that's exactly what it is. It's so heartbreaking to see these kids so unfairly struggling so early on in their life, but it's heartwarming to see the joy that it brings them running out with the team as well.
We'll come back to the Bombers because I want to talk more about that as we work our way through. Your calls, 1300 222 774, the talkback number. The headline today clearly belongs to the Tasmania Devils, though, who have their first coach in the AFL. It is Ken Hinckley, who is going to lead the footy club. He spoke earlier today alongside the chairman and the CEO.
that I'm a footy coach. That's what I know. I don't know too much else. I just know what a footy coach does and how he behaves. So my passion in my my world and my family's world is that I'm a coach. And when I get an opportunity to coach young people particularly, it's something that I thrive in and I love and I always have. And it keeps me really young. It keeps me really excited to coach the Tasmanian Football Club. It's a special time. It's a special event for this place. I played a game of state football down here a long, long time ago.
You took a hanger too, didn't you?
Oh, I probably took more than one, but I did, and I played it, and you just knew the passion of the footy state, and you know, it's 160 plus years of football down here, and as much as we're a start-up club, we are a football state, and that's what we are. Well, it's about the beginning. Inaugural coach, like 100 years' time when Tasmania have won so many premierships. At some point, there'll be a revision moment where we look back and go, well, who was the first coach of the footy club? And my name's going to be there forever. It's something I'm going to be so proud of. And, to be a part of that, it's such an exciting day for me and hopefully for everyone involved with Tasmania and the Tasmanian people, because I'm now a Tasmanian.
Corbin and Ben on AFL Monday. That was Ken Hinckley earlier today. Adam Ramanaskas in the house taking your calls on 1300 222 774. So the Devils got their man, and Grant O'Brien is the chairman of the Tasmania Devils, and I'm pleased to say he joins us on ABC Radio across the country. Grant, appreciate your time.
G'day, Corbin. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. It's been a busy day for you. I saw you up there at 11 o'clock this morning alongside Ken Hinckley. Why is he your guy? Why is Ken Hinckley the inaugural coach of the Devils?
We were pretty clear on what we wanted to get in a head coach for the inaugural team, and in mindful of the fact that this isn't an established team, that this is a team to be created from the ground up. So we had some pretty specific qualities we were looking for, and frankly, Ken fitted those brilliantly. Wears his heart on his sleeve. He's a pretty transparent character and someone who's able to connect really well with the community and obviously a footy club. So, as I said earlier today, he talked about character, he talked about being able to connect, and he talked about care. And our view is, in relation to establishing and bringing a group of players together for the first time, they're pretty important qualities.
Grant, did the last 24 hours move as quickly internally as it seemed to from externally?
Yeah, we moved pretty quickly. It's been a pretty thorough and formal process that we've undertaken. We were pretty well clear on what we wanted to do. That is the committee, the subcommittee that was in fact the selection panel. Once we'd made a clear decision as a selection committee, we needed to get it in front of the board pretty quickly because we were trying to contain, the narrative and stay in front of the news cycle. I'm not sure that we managed to do that, but it meant that we pulled the board together on Sunday afternoon and asked Ken to come down and make a final presentation to the board. The board accepted the selection committee's recommendation that Ken be appointed as our coach and got it out there today. So, yeah, it did get pretty rapidly, but that didn't reflect everything that happened before Sunday.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, Grant. How long did that process take you? Are you able to take us into that? You said it was a very lengthy and thorough process. Was it? Are we talking all the way back to last year? You know, Nathan Buckley has been aligned with this job for so long now, and obviously the decision was made to appoint Ken Hinckley. But was it 3 months, 6 months, 12 months process for you guys?
It's probably more than a year. And in the early part of that period was really sounding out, talking to a lot of people, a lot of people that helped us kind of shape what we needed, but also a lot of people that we thought might be interested in taking on the role. The formality or the formal piece of it really came into action probably 2 to 3 months ago, where we started taking more formal presentations, and in the last month, final formal presentations, if you like. Again, thorough, lengthy, but really the best part of a year to get to where we needed to. And I'm really said today, couldn't be more confident that we've landed with the right guy, and that proves the process that we went through in my mind.
How many people presented as part of the formal presentation process?
Yeah, I'm not going to go into that. You know, we've been pretty clear that we wanted to protect, you know, the reputation of the people that we were talking to, and you know, send a signal in terms of the intended levels of integrity that we wanted to adopt as a club. Safe to say that we knew clearly what we wanted. We talked to the sort of people that we thought could deliver that, and we've selected one out of that. It wasn't a particularly easy decision at the end of the day. The quality of the people that we spoke to was obviously very high, and for that we count ourselves pretty fortunate.
I always speak about the four pillars, so the chair, the CEO, the coach, and the GM of footy. You've got three of the four. When do you expect to have the GM of footy appointed by?
Yeah, we're hoping to have that done in the coming months. You know, part of you know, the order that you've spoken about is the people, and not so much the chair, I've got to say, more the CEO and the coach involved in that. We've got a few people that we'd like to think might be interested, and obviously Ken's input to that is going to be vital. But you know what modern day coaching is, or coaching departments are, it's about getting those combinations right. It isn't just about a head coach anymore. It's about, as you say, the general manager of the football, development coaches, specialist coaches, and those sort of things. Having the right mix is critical for getting the best outcome from the football department.
Grant, how important was Ken's experience at Gold Coast when they initially came into the competition? Did he speak much about that and the missteps they took? Because I listened to his press conference today, and he spoke about the difference between Gold Coast list build and also GWS's list build. Now, I know it's not all about list build and it's about building entire club, but did he go into detail about what worked and what didn't work?
It was one of the first reasons we spoke to Ken, was to get his view on his experience at Gold Coast, what he learned. And, you know, from that point he talked about, as you've said, you know, the things that they learned, the things that they observed with GWS, and we've spoken to GWS at length, people there as well, just again to get a sense of that sort of thing. So whether it's the way that the players were accommodated, or the proportion of senior people that they brought into the club at the very start, or indeed the sort of coach that they chose at the very start. There are really rich lessons there to be learned from those two programs. And Ken obviously having a first-hand insight into the Gold Coast was great information for us, and gives us a sense of confidence that you know, this isn't brand new ground for him. There aren't a lot of people that have had the opportunity to do what Ken did at the Gold Coast, and he's going to be able to do it the Tasmania Footy Club, and that is start with a greenfield site.
It is a significant day for the Tasmanian team, so I don't want to take away from that or put a dampener on things too much, but it is a provisional licence at the moment. We're expecting a full licence when the stadium deal is signed. When do we expect that?
Yeah, it's a two-person or two-company process going through the tender process at the moment. I think it's kind of the end of September, early October, where that part of the process will be known. From that, one of the tenderers will be deemed to be successful and the contract will be signed by the end of the year. That's the timetable that the Macquarie Point Development Authority have informed us of, and I know Corbyn was at the media breakfast on Friday morning and heard from Ann Beach and heard her give that sort of time frame as well. It's proceeding well. We've got a good team down there. Ann Beach is doing a terrific job there. It's a big project, and it's a big amount of money for a state like ours. So it's something that needs to be done carefully. We think they're taking all the right steps, and we're confident that the stadium will be assigned a builder before the end of the year, and they'll be coming out of the ground about the middle of next year.
And then once we come out of the ground, Grant, in the middle of next year, when do we expect the ball to be kicked in anger there?
Yeah, 2031. I think we're looking for The first kick in anger. The stadium will be finished around...
Well, I think it'll be celebration, sorry. Anger might have been the wrong word there.
Poor choice of words. But it's a day that, you know, we can't wait to have. But there are a few big days before that. You know, I've got to say seeing the VFL team run out on the ground in front of 15,000 people at North Hobart was pretty emotional. I'm not sure how I'm going to cope with the first game for the... AFL team and the AFLW team. It's as you saw from the media scrum today in Hobart, it's a big deal from an AFL point of view. It's an even bigger deal here in Tasmania because it is a lot about a footy team, but it's a lot about the future of the state too and what it'll bring, you know, in terms of economic benefits and social benefits to the good people of Tassie. And that's a responsibility that we're really aware of. It's also part of, you know, in a way, why Ken's the right sort of selection as a coach, because he'll help bring the state together. He'll give us our best shot at bringing together a competitive and exciting football club in ready for 28.
Grant O'Brien, the chairman of the Tasmania Devils, on the back of Ken Hinckley's announcement today as their inaugural senior coach. Grant, just last one before you go. So 4 years in the AFL, essentially, for Ken Hinckley. It's a five-year deal, but obviously encompasses 2027 before entry in the competition. No inaugural coach has ever coached more than 4 years for the other startups in the competition. What does success look like, given the struggles that expansion teams have had early on in recent times? When you look back at this in 5 years' time and Hinckley's deal is coming towards an end, what will success look like in his initial contract with the Devils?
That he's successfully established the club, made the most of the lease concessions that we've been provided with, and we're starting to win in year four and five. We'd also like to think that we've managed to get a final by that period of time. Ken was asked the question today about kind of along the same sort of lines and whether or not he'd want to continue, and he said, "If we're winning, my oath, I do." So it's you know, for us, it's about taking these early steps in the right way. We've got the right coach to do that. We think we've got the right list and concessions to have this club successful within that period of time. And if Ken's doing a good job at that point in time, given his level of energy at the moment, I don't see why he wouldn't be continuing. But there's a bit to play out between now and then, and we're just focusing on, you know, making the right steps early on. Really, the quality of the club is going to be determined by the quality of people that we're going to attract to the club. And two of the key appointments in Brendan Gale and Ken Hinckley, we couldn't be more pleased about.
Grant, it's been a full-on day, a milestone day in the history of the Tasmania Devils Football Club. Appreciate you being so generous with your time at the end of it. We'll let you get some rest. Appreciate you jumping on.
Good on you. Thanks very much, guys.
Grant O'Brien with us there, the chair of the Tasmania Devils.
It's pretty special. Yeah. You look at Ken and certainly a people person. So I think he spoke about the Gold Coast and GWS experience. Mm. The GWS experience was more around getting the club together first, creating a culture, creating standards. So, Kevin Sheedy, Graham Allen, Mark Williams, those type of really experienced football people at the Giants.
So the obvious question is, did they get the appointment right? And it's hard for us on the outside to judge that. We're not part of the presentations. We know the reports and, you know, the names of John Longmire and Nathan Buckley that were linked to this particular position. The one thing I'd say in comparison to those guys, if nothing else, they've got the guy out of the three that'll provide the most highlights in his media conference. Like, if you look at the last 10 years of what they all provided, like, Nathan Buckley's a great media performer, but he doesn't buy into a lot of the theatre or anything like that. He's a footy guy. John Longmire, the same. We've seen more of him probably since he finished than we ever did coaching. He was a shutters down guy, nothing to see here. We're all about the football. Ken Hinckley's, had the plane game with Jack Ginnivan. He always pumped up the showdown. He's an emotional guy. Like, if nothing else, out of the three, they're going to have the guy that can spruik the club, which is, I know there's multiple duties for the senior coach, but they've got someone that can really sell what they're offering.
Oh, I think when you put the Venn diagram and the three circles of Geelong being the community club, it was once Sleepy Hollow, that has become a unique selling proposition for them. You've got the Gold Coast Suns, his years there when they were the early expansion team, and and the challenges they faced. And then you've got the other circle interlapping of where he picked Port Adelaide up from and where he took them over a 13-year journey. When you put those three circles together as a Venn diagram and look in the middle, it's exactly what this Tasmania team needed. So once I sort of thought of all of that and they spoke about it and Ken spoke about it, I went, yeah, that's pretty obvious.
Where does it leave the other candidates? So Nathan Buckley is obviously a senior assistant at the moment at Geelong as part of a very talented coaching group there. He was obviously public in the past speaking about his want to be the Devils' inaugural coach. I think there's actually something really admirable about that he's, you know, he's missed out seemingly on the Melbourne job, same with the Tasmania jobs. He's gone back in football to upskill himself there. We know what a footy mind he is, but where does this leave him now?
Well, I don't think he'll get the Carlton job. So Graham Wright, whether he sacked him or the like at Collingwood, that was the situation there. And Graham Wright's the CEO now at Collingwood. So I don't think Carlton. He's probably the next jobs that come up, and what they are and who they are and when they are is a consideration. I imagine Essendon would have spoken to Nathan Buckley and asked the question.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point from Rama. I think it puts John Longmire very much back in the frame for Carlton. And I think Daniel Harford and I spoke about this on yesterday's episode. I think that's probably the best fit for John Longmire at the moment. You're not so sure, Rama?
Nah. My gut feel on a Carlton is still a first-time coach.
No, I think Graham Wright will go that way. I agree with you. I just think that...
I don't know if he's even...
In the mix.
In the mix.
Is he in the mix for Essendon?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I think if I was thinking about it clearly, he's more of a chance at Essendon than he is at Carlton.
Right.
That's what I would say.
It's interesting these guys that premiership coaches like him and to a lesser extent, Adam Simpson and even Simon Goodwin, they seem to come out of these positions with a few warts on them that it almost takes a little bit of time. And part of me thinks, well, what other way is there to do it? Like, if you have premiership success and you're contending repeatedly, of course you're going to have some strained relationships at the end of it. Every coach ends a tenure the same way.
How many coaches walk away on top?
Yeah.
Very few. So who are you going to get as a two-time running premiership coach that comes to you straight out of a system that left great relationships with everybody on the way out? It sort of it feels like, as an Essendon supporter speaking, I'll take the 12 years of success and a few strained relationships at the end rather than what's just happened for the last 30 years.
And that's the question that I wanted to ask Grant O'Brien is around – the only one that hasn't got warts on him at the moment is Chris Fagan.
Yeah.
And Tasmanian. But then to Grant's credit, he spoke about, well, look, I'm not going to get involved in who we spoke to. And
Scuttlebutt.
Which I like. But that's the only coach at the moment that you would imagine that hasn't got any warts on him.
I still think John Longmire's not totally out of it at Carlton.
Okay.
I just want to put that out there.
Michael from Tasmania, the first of our callers on 1300 222 774. Hello, Michael.
Good evening, guys. Ben, you know I'm a St Kilda supporter and I love them. We are Devils members. And thank you, Rama, for your team keeping St Kilda in the 10 yesterday.
You going to jump off, Michael, and jump on Tassie?
We're members of the Devils, but if the Devils play St Kilda, it's always going to be St Kilda.
Fair enough.
I wanted to say, I mean, I was so disappointed in St Kilda last Thursday night. They were jumped at the start, and it was that classic St Kilda Thursday night, Friday night type situation. But how hard it is to win at Geelong when, and this is not bagging the umpires, the free kicks in the first quarter was like 8-1. We had nothing go our way. Do you understand, like, two Geelong players have been fined by the Match Review Officer for rough conduct in the first quarter. Neither of those resulted in free kicks. Stephen Silvani was taken off the ball at least twice in marking contests. And I watch a lot of footy, and it gets paid all the time, that block. And he was blocked twice, no free kick. It just makes it so much harder to win. And what do we do about it?
Michael, appreciate your call. 1-300-222-774. There was only 23,000 there too, so if there was a little bit of home cooking, it wasn't as if it was as loud as it could have been. I think we had Steve Hocking on earlier in the season. He said, look, the Saturday twilight slot's our ideal slot, but they don't go in the numbers, I think, that we thought they would for a team that's been so successful. Anyway.
The home cooking doesn't happen at Kidinia Park anyway.
Well, apparently it does. What you mean in terms of the actual cooking of the?
Yeah, some snacks for us. Yeah,
I'll take the running water that we got last week. We haven't had that every game there this year. Every Monday, it is our Mad Monday segment, so you can ring up and tell us what made you mad from the weekend of footy, 1300 222 774. Have you got one for us, Rammer, off the top? What made you mad from the weekend?
Oh, you know exactly what made me mad. The roof. It was a stunning day Saturday for North Melbourne and Melbourne.
Yes.
And my understanding was twilight games at at the Docklands,
yep,
the roof will be open.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you then read from another statement that said the game had to be post 4:30,
yep,
which I find extraordinary. But then you also proceeded to talk to me about shadows and all this garbage. And then I'm up this morning and lying in bed watching the World Cup like everybody else. And guess what's on the field on the biggest sporting event the world has ever seen?
Yep.
There's shadows, isn't there?
And didn't it look terrible?
And amazingly, the game was still played.
I couldn't see the ball when the camera transitioned into the shadows.
Please. Human beings have been trying to...
Wasn't it amazing that the spectators got to sit in the sun, enjoy the sunshine?
Human beings have been trying to perfect indoors for generations. And then we finally do it and people like you want to go outdoors again.
The whole idea is we're trying to make it work. You know, we're playing football inside a stadium.
Do you know football at a local level is played outdoors?
Right, yeah.
And there's a bit of mud on the ground. There it gets a bit wet and all that sort of stuff. And that's sort of, that's the conditions.
Yep. Indoor would have suited Corbin, to be fair.
So you just want...
Says the man who wore long sleeves over here.
Well, long sleeve was fine. That's just to get warm.
1-300-222.
A bit of mud on the knees didn't hurt anybody.
1-300-222-774. 1-300-222-774. What made you mad from the weekend of footy?
I've got a mad Monday.
Yep.
I was at the game getting ready to call. Got there nice and early. Get myself all prepped. Also put on the game on Fox Footy. And our very own Corbin Middlemouse was broadcasting this game. And what do I hear other than Jared Healy explain to me that Marcus Bontempelli has been the number one rated player in the competition for the past 5 years and how well Marcus Bontempelli is going as a player and he's the best player in the comp. And I thought, oh, Corbin doesn't agree with that. So he'll challenge Jared here. Crickets. Absolute crickets. Nothing from the man who has tried to tell us all year that Nick Dacos is the best player in the game. He loves champion data and the numbers.
It's not the time or the
place
for it.
He tells us it's all about the numbers.
It wasn't the time or place. We had the graphic there ready to go with the 4 years of him being number one. Couldn't quickly say to the producer, oh, by the way, have you got anything on Nick for us that we can run?
That's soft for you.
Yeah, and no one believes in the numbers of champion data more than our man Corbin Middlemouse.
Don't talk down champion data.
Never. Our man Corey Mobilio is a good friend of ours.
Listening to the show. As is Matt, by the way. Can we shout Matt out while we're doing this?
We can. We're walking down the street to get lunch today.
You'll
and Matt in the blue hat walking down the other side of Wells Street.
Shouts out across the street.
Boys, love the show. Points at his earpods.
Listening to it right now,
which was obviously half an eye from last night. So Corbin was a bit left out. But good on you, Matt. What a legend.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we love that. Appreciate it, Matt. It should almost go on the Wall of Fame.
We're going to put Matt in the blue hat on the Wall of Fame.
Just while we're still on the Tasmania Devils, the question is here, who are the players that Tasmania should chase?
Yeah, I've done some work on this today. Sorry, Corbin. You've got the Ken Hinckley grab that piqued my interest.
I would say what GWS did slightly better than, you know, the Suns was they got some experienced people in that were real leaders of standards, and I think they made a massive difference. But they also went and got people like Callum Ward and Phil Davis, young 21, 22-year-old players who were just starting their journey who led the standards for them too. I think there's a lot of things that you can learn from that, and that's the great thing. We get the experience of what those two teams went through, but we have the footy community that they didn't have.
So I heard Ken say that today, and it's become accepted wisdom, hasn't it, Rama, that GWS got their start as a foundation club better than the Gold Coast Suns. The Suns went very young. GWS went and got senior guys. Some of those were the likes of Chad Corns, Luke Power, Dean Brogan, and James McDonald. Then they got two young, high-character guys on the rise that could grow with the team, Phil Davis and Callum Ward. So I thought, who are some of those guys that Tasmania could go and get? Now, I think there's an obvious one to begin. Alex Pearce. You know, he might be a premiership captain at the end of this year. If that's the case, probably makes it easier for him to leave. He's a Tasmanian. He can be the inaugural captain. Tom Stewart is out of contract
the end of 2027. Tasmania coming in 2028. Late starter will have missed out on some money. They got big signing bonuses. Say, Tom, you missed out on a few years at the start. You came in as a 24-year-old. We're going to help you recoup that at the very end. Good person, great player. Get him down there. George Hewitt, out of contract 2027. They need someone to bang bodies in the midfield with some of their kids. He's a great citizen. Go and get him. Toby Nankervis, Richmond captain, I know, out of contract end of this year, I understand it. He's a Tasmanian. Yep. He could, you know, you need a ruckman as some Next of your year. Young rucks develop, yeah. So he can kill a couple of years for you there. Ryan Mansell as well, maybe a package deal with Mon Conti, Tasmanian as well. And then the two young guys, you go and get Logan Morris, use some of that signing bonus again, and you go and get one of Riley Sanders or Colby McKercher. Or maybe there's another player there. That was the young midfielder, Callum Ward type, was the hardest one I had to find.
The other two guys that I like from a Tasmania search, and I feel for the Tigers on this front, but Seth Campbell and Sam Banks, who are both Tasmanians. So there's the obvious pull there, but feels like you put those guys in any team in the competition and they're going to be impactful. Banks, a good user out of the back half, and obviously it looks like Campbell can not only play in the forward 50, he can also play good midfield time.
I think what they'll be looking for, if they're referencing GWS a lot at the moment, so they're going to be looking for the best young leaders in the competition. Phil Davis was already touted at that stage at his career at Adelaide as being the next captain of Adelaide.
Yep.
So I'm sort of starting to scan the competition now of who clubs are talking about.
Disco Turner. Disco Turner's been touted as the next captain of Melbourne, so maybe it's a Dan Turner type.
Yeah. Well, who are you thinking? The guys that have come out of the underage system perhaps in recent years?
Yeah, I probably want to take a little bit more of a closer look at it, but
that's not what we do in the media game. No, we just throw names out.
Well, you speak for yourself. I spent about an hour and a half going through every name and working everything out today.
But you've probably got to understand of what path they're going to go down. I think now it's pretty clear they're going to go down the GWS path.
It would make sense too that the Giants get a chance to refine it from the Suns, and then the Devils get a chance to refine it again.
Because the easiest thing is, so Naz is out of contract next year. They just throw the kitchen sink at him.
Well, 1-300-222-774. So the other thing to keep in mind is anyone that's off contract at the end of 27 or 28, basically an automatic free agent. Yeah. So they can sign them without having to get a deal done. That's can pinch one from every single club in the competition. So essentially they get 18 guys for nothing, and all you got to do is be out of contract at the end of 2027.
Do you like my suggestions there, Rama?
I think Alex Pierce, is he getting a little bit older?
He's born in, he's 32 at the moment.
Okay.
So he'll be 33, 34 by the time we get there.
A couple of years.
Ken Hinckley was asked today about Zach Butters.
No, I haven't told Zach to wait his decision out a year. So, but if you're listening, Zach, maybe put your decision off for a year.
So he took it in the spirit that it was designed.
Well, he would be
obvious,
ideal.
The obvious link.
Yeah. Well, he's tough.
If you can get a top five player in the competition, why wouldn't you?
I actually think what you're talking about, the older guys are probably, you're going to get marquee signings. That's just going to happen. Like, because the money that they've got, the bonus pool that they've got is ridiculous.
$5 million.
Yeah.
But it's those older guys, like, you know, a Jamie Elliott, for example, who I know really, really well, is so highly valued for his leadership inside Collingwood. Could you get a Braden Maynard? Somebody like that, real hard, tough sort of, you know, that's what type of team Ken will want to build.
Brad in Burwood is the next of our callers, 1-300-222-774. Hello, Brad.
On you, Brad.
G'day, guys. How are we?
We're well, thanks.
I just was wanting to recognise a few of the challenges I can see with the Ken and the big guys in Tassie. I'm a Tasmanian and all for it. But at the moment, to attract the big-name players like that you're talking about, it's all well and good to say the dollars, but the problems I see at the moment is the infrastructure, we haven't got any of it in place yet. So to get them there, what are they selling when, for the first, till the stadium's built, you're going to be training in Hobart and then having to travel to Launceston for your 7 home games. And on top, and as I say, at the moment, they haven't even turned a sod of soil on their high performance centre at Kingborough. And they're actually training out at Brighton, which is 40 km north of Hobart. So for a big name player who's being approached by the club, you're looking at it and you're going, well, okay, where do I go and do my rehab? Where do I go and all these things. And at the moment, they're not there to sell them. Like, that's going to be a big challenge for Ken and the crew at the moment.
Yeah, great point.
I think Brad is spot on.
Yep.
And Tasmania had presented to a lot of player agents over the last 12 months and the like of what it's going to be. And my thought was always, if you can't have the stadium up and running, have your high-performance facility there and ready to go, like 100% completed.
Which is what the Suns didn't have.
Nor did the Giants either.
And we're talking about the stadium being ready in 2031, but when is anything on time and under budget? Never.
Yeah. And the other problem that they're going to have is at a certain point, there's only so many guys that can work on, so many people that can work on stadiums you know, in Australia. The Brisbane one has to be ready by 2032. Yeah. We know that, obviously. So I must admit, I get the impatience. You know, Tassie's waited 100 years or whatever to be part of this competition, but it would have been perfect, wouldn't it, if they could somehow get the team to enter year one of the stadium, have it all ready to go, and you walk into it in that sense. But there's going to be some hard yards in those first few years.
There's other grounds to play at.
Yeah.
You've got Balreath, obviously, and the like. So there's some beautiful stadiums already down there. But it's the facility, because that's where the players spend the most time.
Yeah,
Monday to Friday, they're there for hours and hours a day.
You can't have 3 years too, where it's essentially saying, "Hey, we're just these are just gap years while we're waiting to really have a run at it." AFL Monday on ABC Radio, Corbin and Ben with Adam Ramanaskis in the house. Your calls on 1300 222 774. The Bombers, so huge win for Dean Solomon yesterday. It's obviously his first as a caretaker coach in 10 attempts, dating back to his first stint with the Gold Coast Suns. The question here, does it change his prospects of becoming the full-time senior coach on the back of that win yesterday?
Yeah, well, I think what it starts to reveal is what he's been trying to do with the team over a number of weeks now. Now, okay, there's been some performances that you sort of go, oh, where's all this heading? But I think yesterday you actually just start to see a little bit of the fruits of the labour. So you look at hit the midfield of Sharp and Roby in there at times. You look at Farrow and how he was going. But then it's also the smaller forwards. Young Husson, the efforts that he put in. Kakko, so a number of guys in the back half of the ground. You know, Roberts technically shouldn't be playing at the moment. He needs a shoulder reconstruction. Yeah. But I think it shows his commitment to the cause and what he wants to do. But I think for the first time, what he got is he got the energy and effort out of the experienced guys. And that becomes critical, because they, as much as there's energy from the young kids, and you know, how long can they sustain in the game, it's got to be a constant from the older guys. And I think he got real performances out of those older guys yesterday. So, look, you know, if you're just watching Essendon over recent weeks, you are going, well, how's this all going to work? But if you actually sit down and listen to what Dean Solomon has been saying in his press conferences yesterday, was exactly how he wanted the game to look.
I've been saying a little bit that I feel like, and maybe it's the number nine on his back, maybe it's just that he's a sort of bigger body midfielder, but Sully Roby moves in similar ways to Paddy Cripps. I'm not saying he's going to be Paddy Cripps, but moves similarly to him, which is a good one for Essendon. And last year's draft looks really positive for them as well. So Sully Roby, Jacob Farrow, Max Kondogiannis, looking really good, and Dyson Sharp as well. They all look like they can play. So that is something to build on.
Yeah. I think they've had a couple of good drafts, to be honest. Yeah. And I think Matt Rosa deserves a bit of credit for that and what he's been able to do since coming in. So there was the obvious lost years where, you know, they had the high picks and Sardis and Hobbs, and going back before that, obviously the three in the COVID year that they took. But they've now had seven rising star noms over the last 2 years. So Roberts, Clark, Caddy, Kakko last year. Into this year, Farrow, Roby and Sharps, the round 19 rising star nom. So seven guys, even though they've only won two games in that period, they've had seven guys nominated for the rising star. So positive signs there, at least.
The other thing I wanted to say about Sully Roby is he's 18, hasn't even turned 19 yet, barely got to do a preseason because he was injured. He
had a back stress fracture.
Yeah, so which is fairly significant. You can't do much when you've got a back stress fracture. So this is someone that young, with that little of preparation, showing these signs already. I think there's a lot to like there.
Good news on the Nate Caddy front. He's been discharged from hospital. It was a scary episode yesterday where he came off the ground with an elevated heart rate and ultimately spent the night in hospital as a result. Sam Durham was asked about it yesterday on our coverage on ABC Sport, and this is what he had to say.
Yeah, I just got told, I think he had some heart palpitations, or is that how you say it? I think he's having too much Red Bulls and stuff before the game. So I think he needs to go to the dietitian and sort out what he's taking before the game. So, no, I think he'll be all right, but, yeah, it's a bit scary one with that one.
Always. Whenever you hear someone having heart palpitations in a game of
footy.
Well,
his heart rate wasn't going down. So upon the effort, obviously your heart rate rises, but then when he was resting, it was just staying at that elevated state. So I think that's where the concern was for Nate Caddy. The other one is Xavier Dersma will miss the remainder of the season. So that hamstring late in the game was obviously a quite significant one. So I think Nick Bryan will be pretty sore as well. He took a couple of big hits. He'll have a few bumps and bruises this morning, no doubt.
If you want to jump in on this, our number 1-300-222-774. Which of the 8-win teams had the biggest slip-up on the weekend? Now, what I mean by that, St Kilda, GWS, Carlton and North Melbourne all started the weekend on 32 premiership points. So after St Kilda lost on Thursday night, it meant that if any of the other three won, they would take St Kilda's spot in the wildcard places, which is the top 10. The Giants, opportunity came and went against the Bombers. The Blues, opportunity came and went against the Pies. And for North Melbourne, after leading at quarter time and at halftime, the opportunity passed them by two Saturday at Docklands. Who is going to rue that the most?
Well, I thought North Melbourne. I thought their last 2 weeks, Collingwood and Melbourne, were winnable games for them. And it proved correct. They had chances to win both those games. So, you know, 6-2 on Saturday before Melbourne really got going. And then after that, North Melbourne really didn't fire a shot. And I thought the other one was the Giants. Yeah. You know, they came here. They should have been able to beat an Essendon team. But, you know, it's sort of the any given Sunday.
You know they're 4-2 against the top six, the Giants. Yeah. 4 wins, 2 losses. And against the bottom five, they're 2-3. They got a better record against the top six than they do against the bottom five.
I think Rammer misunderstood the question too. The aim wasn't to run through all of them. It was which one of the
two?
Yeah, that's half. Yeah.
That's okay.
Okay.
But the other two played.
I thought you gave us three.
Hang on. The other two teams. So St Kilda played Geelong, who were ahead of them on the ladder. Mm. And I think also
Carlton Collingwood.
That was a 50-50 for me.
Yep.
What about for you, Corb?
I actually find it hard to say the Giants because I feel like their wins against the good teams and their losses against the poor teams are just cancelling each other out. And as a result, they're almost, you know, on face value where they're at. I felt like this was the kind of game that if Carlton were going to make it, they had to start beating some teams around their station. You can't just beat the lowly teams and then hope to make it. So if they wanted to be a top 10 team, I thought the Pies were gettable the other night. And as Josh Fraser said in the aftermath, they know their system better than we do. And they were too good.
I want to bring this through to you. So this was a theme that I brought up with Daniel Harford on the Sunday night edition of the ABC AFL Daily Podcast. I think this was the weekend that proved why we don't need the wild card, because none of these four teams who had a chance to really put their flag in the ground and prove why they belong and deserve a wild card position could win. They don't deserve to play what we're calling finals, and this weekend proved it.
I'm the other way. I actually think that this reinforced again why the wild card's going to be great for the competition.
Agree.
So essentially now all you're doing is putting a line through, four teams? Port Adelaide, West Coast, Essendon and Richmond.
Yep.
The Suns are a game and percentage out of playing in the finals.
Yeah, but so, essentially all you're doing is getting another game of those teams that we've already learned, given what we saw from them on the weekend. They don't deserve to play finals.
So you don't think 9th or 10th can beat 7th or 8th week one of the wild card?
No, I don't, given what we've seen on the weekend.
Yeah, I think we will. I think essentially what you've got is you've got 14 of the 18 teams still alive. If we only had a top 8 system, right now we would be down to 9. Mm. And the only intrigue left in the season would be to see,
correct,
out of the Bulldogs, Collingwood and Geelong, which two teams make the finals.
And that's exactly what the AFL wanted. They wanted fans to be coming to the games late in the season with meaning behind them.
Yeah, I understand and appreciate all of that. If the Western Bulldogs played any of St Kilda, GWS, Carlton or North this weekend.
They've already lost to Carlton this year.
Yeah, okay. Collingwood, if Collingwood took on St Kilda, GWS, Carlton or North, would you be taking any of those teams against Collingwood?
Collingwood beat North Melbourne by half a kick, didn't they?
And we've seen the Giants that they're
very good points you make, both of you. I still disagree.
The Giants' footy against the best has actually been good. Mm. The problem is they've struggled against the lowly teams down the bottom.
Can you imagine North Melbourne supporters if they finished 10th?
Yeah. It would be a huge
boost. They have been starved of any success for such a long period of time.
They're not going to finish 10th, though.
Well,
I said, can you imagine, Ben?
But that's why we play the games. There's a good one on Sunday, which I think you're doing. So North Melbourne and St Kilda, all of a sudden high stakes. Yep. You know, winner of that game most likely in the top 10 while we sit here next Monday. They do have a tougher draw. They've still got to play Geelong, Sydney and Hawthorn on the run home, the Roos. They're a fascinating conversation. Sonia Hood, the president, wrote to members in the preseason basically saying it's time to see more than brief flashes. And she is good enough to come in and sit with us on ABC Mornings when I do my segment with Raph Epstein every Monday. And so I asked her mid-season, have we seen more than brief flashes? And she said yes. So I thought today I'll try the same question again to Sonia Hood, and this is what she had to say in response.
Yes, I reckon we have seen more than the brief flashes. Have we seen enough? I don't know yet. So ask me that at the end of the season. We've got, what have we got, 5 rounds to go? 3 of them are at Docklands. We've played well at Docklands this year. We're still mathematically in it as a Carlton, and I would argue that we are more than mathematically in it.
It's a big 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Still plenty left to play for from a Kangaroos point of view, if you listen to that.
Well, they're 3 wins better than last year already. So, you know, if they can get 10 wins, I think it's a huge tick. Huge tick in the right direction. Their problem is consistency still within games. You know, you look at Saturday, for example, they looked outstanding.
Yeah.
And then they just dropped off.
Yeah. They've also got St Kilda, Hawthorn, Western Bulldogs, Geelong and Sydney.
Well, if they're
probably not winning 3 of those,
good enough.
They?
Yeah.
If they're good enough, Ben.
You got to beat some teams.
I have to imagine it.
Any given Sunday.
All right, David Astle's coming up in just a moment. Lightning quick on the way out. Premiership pecking order. So the Swans are second at the moment. I don't think anyone's got them second, though, in their power rankings. So if we've all got Fremantle 1, what does 2, 3, 4 look like?
Brisbane is 2 for me, definitely.
Yeah, agree.
I've got Adelaide 3rd.
Ooh.
And I've got Hawthorn 4th.
I might flip those.
I have got, if all finals are at the MCG, Melbourne 3rd.
Yes.
No, I've got Adelaide 3rd.
Yep.
Yep, I think I like Adelaide.
Yep.
I'm not sure who my 4th one is.
Yeah.
I'm not huge on Hawthorn yet.
I used to have Geelong a lot higher, but it feels like without Cameron and Holmes, that's a huge disadvantage. Yep. Thanks to Anthony Furchie for all his work on socials. Thanks to Jules Hay for her work producing the program. David Astle on the way on local radio. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Corb.
Thanks, Ram.
Well done.
That was AFL Monday. Don't forget ABC AFL Daily, the home of your footy conversation with 5 episodes a week. Coming up tomorrow, Bob Murphy joins me in studio as we pull apart all the hot takes from the agenda-setting Monday night programs in the footy TV world. So I hope you can join us then when Bob gives us his take on all the hot takes right here on ABC AFL Daily.